As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome back to The Ruck. There are 2 weekends of the regular domestic season to go, and for some clubs it just can't come soon enough. I saw Bath at the weekend, painful to watch. Quinn's painful to watch. Mike, what will you do when it's all over?
I'll hold myself away in a garret and write the next great bestseller.
To follow?
Ivan, the futuristic dystopian sports satire that is flying off the shelves.
Al, you're probably heading off to some distant exotic part of the rugby world to tell us about undiscovered scrummaging techniques. What would that be fair?
No, actually, as much as I'd love to be doing that, I'm heading off to the vast wilderness of San Francisco for the Sevens World Cup. Because how good was the Sevens at the Commonwealth Games? It was great.
Avid, keen listeners will know that today we have cleverly assembled a podcast team with the two rugby writers in existence who have a Y as the second letter of their surname. So we have Mike Aylwin of Million and One Things, Observer,
Sport 500,
best-selling fiction. We need
anyway,
a separate edition to talk about your successes. And Alan Dimmock, superstar feature writer of Rugby World.
Hello.
Al.
Yeah.
So you have the latest copy of Rugby World in front of you.
I do, yeah.
And it's the Top Gun. Explain what the cover is.
It's the next generation. So it's the 50 future stars you need to know about now. So it's a load of guys under the age of 23, fewer than 15 caps, quite a number of them uncapped, and just telling you who you need to keep your eye on, who the next superstars are in line.
Okay, let's have a plump at this. Your long shot. Can you pick out one player from your top 50 who listeners might not have heard of, who you think maybe in 3 or 4 years' time we might be going, bloody hell, we heard that guy on the Ruck. We heard his name there first.
One of the faces of the Rugby World Cup in Japan will be a Japanese second row called Kazuki Himeno. He could be, if you go head out to the Rugby World Cup, you could see his face everywhere there. Young up and coming star. And there's a guy, if you follow Sevens actually, there's a young guy called Etienne Nanai Suturo, who is a Kiwi. He's playing on the Sevens circuit at the moment, but he was signed by New Zealand Warriors rugby league team at the age of 15, straight out of school. There was a bit of a tug of war between New Zealand Warriors and the New Zealand Rugby Union, and he's now representing the All Black Sevens around the world, and he's got a lot of promise behind him, so he's another guy that you might be hearing from.
Excellent. What knowledge we have.
Name.
Yeah. Mike, at the weekend, you spent your time watching
Wasps beat Worcester.
And did that make you feel good about life?
Christian Wade scored a couple of tries. That always makes me feel better about life. I mean, he's my favourite player, isn't he? Everybody's adorable to watch. So fast, deadly. People twice the size of him, wingers twice the size of him, clutching at air as he streaks past them. I wanted to talk about the second yellow card. Well, actually, both yellow cards in a sense, but the second yellow card in particular.
Is this drumroll issue of the day coming up?
Issue of the day from Wasps, certainly.
Go on,
It was Wasps just, in fact, scored a beautiful fourth try, which is important because the race for the top four, as you know, is very tight. And it was called back because there was a big second row lying on the floor in obvious pain, and they noticed that the second row had gone up in the air and come down hard. And the referee clearly wanted to pin it on somebody, and Jimmy Gopeth's right hand rested on the second row's hip as he was airborne, and Gopeth got a yellow card for it, despite the fact that, in fact, it was his own player who'd come across and taken the guy's legs out. And Gopeth had to swing, and I just hate this culture we have where when, you know, there are certain areas that World Rugby want to crack down on, and if anyone is hurt or indeed, if it just looks ugly, somebody has to go for it. And Gopeth was obviously absolutely astonished to receive this yellow card at a crucial point. The whole idea of honest players having to do time in the bin, there's no punishment worse for a player than to be deprived time on the field. And to see players being forced to go off just to satisfy the general image drive of the game just upsets me. I mean, people get hurt playing rugby, we all know that. I don't see why honest, innocent players should be punished for the fact that people get hurt playing rugby.
I mean, there's an interesting point there, because we're still, no matter how long we've had TMOs, no matter how long we've had video replays, and you've heard lots and lots about VAR and soccer and where that's going and what could possibly happen, and some people aren't happy that it's going to be at the FIFA World Cup, for example, but we're still sort of traipsing around that ground where we haven't quite found the sweet spot where enough interference is good and letting the game flow is all right.
Al?
Yes?
Where did you spend your weekend?
I spent my weekend in Ealing, watching Ealing Trailfinders secure second place in the Championship. A team that a lot of people have been looking at and talking about as the discussion about ring fencing comes up, so I went to go and watch their game.
Very good. Ealing, fascinating. Do you think the world would be a better place if Ealing were promoted?
I don't think, and I think they would be, they were, right, this is an interesting one, because they obviously would be delighted to be promoted. They're a very ambitious club with a very ambitious owner, a very ambitious young DOR in Ben Ward. They have certain expectations. They believe that they can build up there. Speaking to some of the fans afterwards, there's a lot that would need to change for Ealing to be able to play in the Premiership, and Gallagher Premiership, as it will be. And for them, you know, their ground isn't sufficient size, so they would have to find somewhere else to play. They would have to have they're already going to have a huge change in playing personnel for next season, for their run at next season's Championship division. There's a lot of uncertainty, and as exciting as it would be, there's a lot of question marks over them. The answer is I don't know how they would fare, but it would be fairy tale to begin with. But it's always fairy tale when a young unfancy team.
Okay,
comes up.
So Mike, he made the point. So if they're going to go up, they're going to have to play at a stadium away from where they are, from where the club has grown and where it belongs. And if they're going to go up, they're going to have to lose most of their players and recruit a new set. So is that a fairy tale, ambition becoming not greed, but is it preposterous ambition?
It's virtually pointless, isn't it?
I mean, is that a rugby club, or is it?
Well, I don't know. You've got Harlequins in southwest London, and then there are three or four other major historic rugby clubs in that region, very close, and their fate has been grisly. London Welsh, grisly. London Scottish, grisly. Richmond, grisly. London Irish could end up being grisly. I mean, what makes Ealing think they're going to suddenly soar into this fairy tale land?
Well, the odds on soaring are less than the aforementioned, because they're a smaller club.
They
average 800 at the moment, a gate of 800. So if they were to go up, they would have to rent a stadium. They'd probably be getting crowds of maybe 2,500 or something. So maybe they make a loss every game, whereas your home game is supposed to be where you make lots of the money.
It's a difficult one because you know, you don't want to go down the line of saying you don't want there to be a reward for ambition. So Coventry was another club I went to this year for a feature in the magazine, and we went to see them, and they've just been promoted back to the Championship, a famous old club
and they want to soar as well, don't they?
They are very, very ambitious, and they have been close to going out of existence a couple times, and they've built themselves back up, and again they see the Holy Grail, and we don't want to get to a stage where we say, nah, that's not for you anymore, because at the moment that's still an option. We'll see what happens when far wealthier and far more influential people than us sit around the table and discuss the fate of professional rugby in this country. But at the moment, you don't want to say that that's a no-no, but it has to be realistic, it has to build. And I suppose for Ealing, you hope that if they do want to take this seriously, that it's going to be getting there in stages.
I agree. You don't want to kill aspiration. You should never want to kill aspiration. But I just look at that aspiration and wonder if there's any sense about it. Very interesting. So along similar lines, Cornwall The Cornish Pirates have a big day tomorrow. That's Tuesday, if you're listening. A big decision on whether they get the thumbs up for a new stadium. If they get a thumbs up for a new stadium, then they can pursue their dreams to go up as well. Mm-hmm. Now, Mike knows that I go on holiday to Cornwall, so for some bizarre reason, that makes me
spiritually
more
in touch.
A more enthusiastic backer of that one. No, there's more of a heartland there.
Exactly. And I mean, yes,
they'll fill a stadium, and you could see that one working.
You could, but I mean,
everyone
holds up Exeter, and there's no doubt Exeter have nailed it, haven't they? I mean, they've been brilliant. But they had a massive cash injection at the start, a windfall, when they sold the county ground for seven-figure sum. And that really helps. And they've obviously got a great guy in Tony Rowe who's come in and sort of guided the situation. And they've got, it's a massive hotbed of rugby in the southwest. And is there extra room for the Cornish Pirates? Quite possibly, I don't know, but we will see. But it's still hard. I mean, even Exeter, and it took them years and millions to build their campaign. They didn't just get relegated a la fairy tale and, you know, soar from there. It took them years to prepare.
I mean, looking at the way that Exeter performed at the weekend, do you think it's looking like it's odds on for them to make another Premiership final?
I'd be astonished if there's an alternative to Exeter being the final.
Yeah.
Can you see anything other than an Exeter Saracens final?
I think that's the likeliest, but watching Wasps, I could see it. It's just their time of year now. The grounds are firming up. They are deadly. Their players are beginning to come back from their various injuries, and yeah, they're looking. Danny Cipriani went off just before half time with a bang to the head again, which he was taken off. He passed his HIA apparently. And was but didn't come out for the second half as a precaution. Wasps did lose their way after that.
It looks now like it's Exeter have got their home advantage semi.
Of course,
yeah.
Saracens are one win over London Irish away from it.
Wasps will beat Northampton at home next round.
So you're going to get Saracens. Wasps will be one of the semis, and then you're going to get Exeter.
Newcastle have to go to Leicester, and they host Wasps.
Yeah,
their last two games.
I sort of think it's going to be Leicester again.
Do you think so? What psychological effect do you think it will have, the fact that Leicester lost at home to their biggest?
It'll make them very angry, and they'll smash Newcastle next round. I should think.
Do you think it's as simple as that? Because it's not like Newcastle didn't show.
Well, yeah, and obviously Dino will be coming back down. Yeah.
But you know, for Newcastle to come back the way they did against Sale, you know, that's mightily impressive.
Yeah.
No matter where you are in the country, no matter who you're playing is, to come back from a deficit, you know, it's not
And
Newcastle Falcons have shown this season, it's not like they're a spineless side. So they're not going to fear a backlash from Tigers. I mean, it's going to be worth watching, certainly, but I don't think it's cut and dry.
So this is week 21, which is 2 weeks away. That is the tie of the round. Leicester at home against Newcastle.
Yeah.
So you're tipping Newcastle then?
That's what it sounded like. You know what? Let's be romantic. We've shot down romanticism in the last part there. Yeah, screw it. Let's see Falcons finish four.
Let's be romantic.
How about Gloucester?
He says screw it. Quinn's just too painful for words. Yeah, so maybe. I went to see John Kingston doing a sort of a small press huddle on Thursday last week, which is the first time he talked publicly.
Oh, really?
following his execution. He's still there till the end of the season, as we know. And fair play to him. He stood there and didn't duck questions and talked about, you know, his disappointment and his sadness that he's going, etc., etc. But he did say he felt pretty confident that there'll be quite some bounce back.
Right. Did he mean that weekend?
Well,
in
the last 3 weeks of his tenure.
There wasn't one on Saturday.
And then James Horwell and Chris Robshaw came and talked to us and said, if anything's going to happen now, we're going to bounce back because we owe that man something. And I mean,
how much of that is empty rhetoric, do you think?
Well, I mean, in retrospect, we can say most of it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just sad. The quality they have there.
I'm sure they will bounce back next season, but you would expect some sort of reaction, but the bottom line is they don't have anything left to play for. They're in this horrific limbo. And Gloucester
pride.
Did.
I mean, you know, but pride. You're a man with pride, Mike. You understand that stuff.
Yes. I hang my head.
The saddest thing for me about that Quinns defeat was Jack Clifford going off again.
Yeah.
Hamstring torn off the bone, I think.
Oh, God.
I mean, what a great player who just is struggling to get anywhere near his potential because he can't get through more than three or four games. I mean, this is, you know, another old conversation about injuries, etc. But I feel for him. And, you know, when Eddie Jones arrived here in England, the first person he started talking about as his possible solution to that number seven jersey was Jack Clifford.
Absolutely. And it's one of those things that's... It's the great shame because you look at the... Even you look at the England under-20s team where they won the World Cup in 2013.
He
captained that side to win over Wales. And you look at all the stars that have come from that team that have gone on to achieve fantastic things. And he's just not quite got there, even though he was the figurehead for that side. And it's one of those things where it's true, you have to wonder, is he going to get there? You'd say that you hope he does, and he certainly has all the talent to get there. It's just about getting his body right.
It's interesting. I don't know how he suffered this particular injury, but I remember talking to Mark Evans, who was then the chief exec of Harlequins, and Chris Malone in the terrible Bloodgate game. Chris Malone, the whole thing started when he had his hamstring torn off the bone, and Mark was saying that this is a new injury in rugby, and previously the only place he saw it was in surfing, when the guy's crouched on the surfboard and the wave crashes over him, and you can have the hamstring torn away from your bone.
Well, I know that from my Cornwall connections.
Well, of course, yeah, you
do. I've had that surfing injury a couple of times.
But this is mimicking what happens now at the ruck when someone's crouched over the ball and gets walloped by some big, ugly fellow coming in at a rate of knots. That All is right. this new.
So Jack Clifford, excessive so now, surfing.
I dare say,
or Jack not enough Clifford surfing.
Probably had
maybe
his...
not too small waves, too big waves.
Yeah,
don't know.
He needs to get out there.
Harlequins.
He needs to get out into the Pacific.
Harlequins have Worcester away and then Exeter at home in their remaining two games. Is John Kingston going to go out in style? Exeter at home is probably because that'll be their last game before the playoffs. They'll have a week between
Absolutely.
That game and the playoffs. They'll put their first team out as not a training run, but kind of a practice run.
Yeah, it's hard to say that even at that stage when one has a lot to play for and the other by that point will have nothing to play for apart from pride.
And Worcester will be playing for something next week in that game in 2 weeks' time. Because Worcester aren't safe yet.
Worcester, I mean, you know, all these teams are perfectly capable, and that's why if you don't have the sharpness of motivation, and maybe doing it for JK is enough, I don't know.
And pride, your special quality.
Well, yes, that's a motivation every week. I mean, that's not different for Harlequins. I mean, they're all, you know, pride motivates any professional sportsman.
Do you find it hard though to put it all on the line with pride every week, Mike?
Yeah, well, you know, if I don't, you know, the Observer doesn't have a match report to run.
iOS helps you control which apps you share your exact location with. There's more to iPhone.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So slightly moving on, but not far. So the Harlequin situation is interesting. John Kingston's leaving. They're now conducting the
global search. They're trawling the planet.
The weekly search for the best candidate.
They've not just taken out a small ad in local papers.
No, they're
there's no Lonely Hearts column.
They're trawling the surface of the globe.
Yeah,
and they want the best DORs to replace him. There are very few English DORs running clubs at the moment.
Because they've all been sacked. There's loads of them available.
That is the point. The question is, are they just not good enough here in these parts? Do they have to come with a Kiwi accent to be any good at this job?
Well, I've got a view on this one, in that, at least certainly with the Quinn situation, it doesn't really matter what the accent is of the people coming out, and I'll give you an idea why. I look at Quinn's and I think of the myth of boiling a frog. You ever heard of that? You put a frog in a pan of boiling water, it'll jump out instantly. But if you leave a frog in a pan of cold water and slowly turn up the temperature, it'll boil to death.
And are you Quinn's, serious? And have you Quinn's, actually tried that?
That's a myth. I've never actually tried it.
Alex, can we try this on air?
That reminds me a lot of Quinn's, in that people have just sort of left the situation around about them change whilst assuming that the conditions are all fine. Everything's going to be the same as the good old days. It's fantastic. And they've sort of rolled on with quite similar personnel, and lo and behold, it's all fallen apart at the seams, and they're now needing massive condition changes. The thing is they need different voices. It doesn't matter where they're from.
Can I just interrupt you just for a second? I don't mean to disturb your flow, but would you say that Northampton have got a boiling pot of water with a dead frog in there as well? I mean, that's certainly the same, isn't it?
Yes, exactly. I don't see the situations as too dissimilar.
And they both won the title and thought, hey, we're in a pretty good place.
Absolutely. And they've done fantastically well over the last few years to promote from within and keep the same people that were there at the glory days stuck in that team, because, hey, we had a winning formula then. If it ain't broke, don't fix it. And actually, the conditions round about them have changed.
Well, you know, Mander had been there for, what was it, 10 or 11 years. I mean, I think Mander's a fantastic coach and manager, it's a director of rugby. I mean, I remember
I don't think anyone's disputing that though, Mike.
But I mean, but when you're there again week to week for 10, 11 years, I mean, it doesn't matter how good you are.
Yeah.
It's going to start.
Isn't this just part of the learning process of becoming good at something, is you fail from time to time? And, you know, I'll bring his name up too quickly, but look how well Stuart Lancaster is doing at Leinster now. Look at for me, the A1 example here is Richard Cockerell, who obviously lost his job at Leicester a year ago, did really well in Toulon end of last season, and has now had a very good season with Edinburgh. So you don't look at him and say, yeah, he's a failed DOR. You look at him and go, well, which English club is going to bring him back?
Absolutely, but do you think he's doing things exactly the same way as he did? Maybe he is doing things exactly the same as he did day to day, but it's undeniable the conditions around Richard Cockerell have changed. You know, there's had to be some sort of change that you can learn from, you can adapt to improve. And, you know, I've spoken on this podcast before about what a good job Richard Cockerell has done with Edinburgh. I mean, look at the result they had at the weekend. Absolutely scalping the Scarlets. And, you know, that's fantastic. But the conditions around about him have had. And, we've all heard from enough people, and certainly fans as well, that Quinn's needs some different voices in there. And so, to go back to your original question, does it matter where they're from? Okay, if you want to talk about young English coaches specifically that might be looking for a job, I mean, you mentioned that the people that are out of a job, I mean, Nick Kennedy's just lost the gig as a DOR, but do you think he would want to jump into that kind of gig straight away? Perhaps he would do. You look at promoting from in, Ali Heffer is a guy who, assistant at Exeter Chiefs, you think, yeah, he could maybe want or be due a go at running a big club. Dave Walder, assistant at Newcastle Falcons, is another guy who is very, very highly rated for what he's doing. Maybe he's due a go. But do you think...
Sam Festy.
Absolutely. Do you think these guys are ready for it? Or do you go, actually, forget the English thing. You know what? If we're doing our global search and we want a young, ambitious, but also a coach with track record, and we've already just got an agreement with the New Zealand Rugby Union, why don't we go to the Crusaders and say, hey, can we have Ronan O'Gara off you early? And we'll make him our new DOR. Because he's had enough experience climbing successful and also troubled times with new clubs. He's willing for an adventure, and he's willing to take on a challenge that's not set for what he's used to. Maybe it's time for him to give someone like Ronan O'Gara a go.
Well, they say they want his boss, don't they? Scott Robertson.
You know, either of those.
No, I like Rona Nagara. That's that's brilliant. As you say, Mike, Scott Robertson, I assume would be, if we were trying to guess their wish list, Scott Robertson would probably be the top. He led Crusaders to the Super Rugby title a year ago. Bring in Ronan. You're making the call.
Why not? At least approach him.
No, I like that. But the interesting thing. So you reeled off a few good names of some smart and very highly respected up and coming young English coaches.
Yeah.
But it seems to me that they're all getting to assistant coach or head coach level, and then it's the next step up as who's going to be prepared to take them.
Yeah.
So Ali Hefa would appear to be the person who most fits the description of someone who could take the step up and run the whole thing as opposed to being a head coach.
Yeah, perhaps. I mean, this is just saying, if you're willing to take a punt on someone, if you want to go for someone established. I mean, you said earlier, Wolf, there was a dream scenario. Who would you pick?
So go on then, dream scenario, who are you picking?
But the thing is the dream scenario, you don't know whether they'd be up to they'd be willing to do it. But Wayne Smith has just taken on a role as the Kobelco Kobe Steelers head coach, DOR in Japan. He will have, to be fair to him, he'll have Dan Carter on his playing staff next season, so that's not a bad signing to have.
If we were playing fantasy DORs, which is a really fun game, everyone at home must try this. Mike, would you have an alternative to Wayne Smith?
I'm going Ben Ryan.
Ben Ryan?
Yeah.
You just shot that from nowhere, haven't you? Because that's like...
No, I think, why not? I mean, he's...
I'm unconventional and I've got lots of pride.
He's unconventional. You know, obviously everything he touches turns to gold in the Sevens game. But, I mean, even before that, he was renowned for his kind of experimental approach to coaching 15s. He's around and he wants to get back into 15s.
Al,
hold on. Has Warren Gatland said what he's going to do after he leaves Wales at the end of the World Cup?
The other thing,
when I was at the London Irish debacle, 35-5 at the Stoop, and Sean Edwards was sitting just behind us in the press box, and apparently he was at the previous game as well. So,
whoa,
that would be a different view on things, wouldn't it?
That would be. So is that a Ruck exclusive, or did you write that for your own newspaper?
I didn't write it for my own newspaper.
Amazing what you hear in these parts. Al, Wayne Smith, seriously, especially given the Quinns All Blacks tie-up makes sense, or did make sense, do you think that if Quinns John Kingston had come to their mutual agreement that he was no longer going to work for them 3 weeks earlier, do you think that Wayne Smith might have been a candidate? Because he only took the job in Japan in the last fortnight.
It was only announced last week, certainly. Who knows how these things work? Genuinely, the machinations of these. Who knows?
Jono, bring back Jono. He's ready. He's done his time.
No one said bring back Jono.
I said bring back Jono when Cockers went. But why not? I mean, Dean Richards did a good enough job at Harlequins. The joke shop aside.
Okay, no joking aside. Stuart Lancaster for the Harlequins job.
I think he's happy where he is.
Well, yeah. Why? And they'd have to prize him away.
There are serious. I mean, he's in a side with Leinster who are going fantastically well. They look like they're set to go fantastically well for a few years, and he's happy where he is, which is something that you would have said must have been a hard thing to attain for Stuart Lancaster, considering how everything changed with England. But also that as well, is there are strong rumours in Ireland that he's being lined up for a very good role in Ireland once Joe Schmidt departs as part of that IRFU setup.
Yeah.
So why would he risk that? I don't think he would.
He might be holding himself for the Ealing job.
Yeah, maybe.
When they go up.
Yeah.
On Saturday, Leinster versus Scarlets in Dublin. And on Sunday, Racing versus Munster in Bordeaux. So two Irish clubs, obviously not very many Englishmen involved. Stuart Lancaster is them carrying the flag.
Flag bearer.
So is that you supporting Lanny then, Mike?
Well, I'm a journalist, so I'm impeccably impartial. I wouldn't support anybody.
Well done.
I do like an underdog, so if you insisted on me supporting somebody, I would go for the Scarlets. They went down by 50 at Edinburgh on the weekend, although I say the Scarlets.
That was a strange
warm-up,
wasn't it?
It was a bunch of players wearing Scarlet shirts.
Well, I mean, to be fair, Leinster made a hell of a lot of changes themselves and lost to Benetton Treviso.
Well, yes, but they had some pretty serious customers in that team.
Yes, but that also tells you the depth of what Leinster have. I mean, they can put out a second string team that's still full of stars, and you know,
yeah, it was still marginal that one.
But I mean, I think it's clear that both teams are keeping their powder dry for this
weekend.
Well, yes, Alan Scarlett's every romantics option.
There's a lot of romanticism in this week's podcast. Yeah. You know what?
That's why I invited you on.
Yeah, you just... To be fair, this is the romantics tie. I think Leinster play some fantastic front foot rugby with their back row playing the way that they can. Okay, they're looking like they won't have Sean O'Brien, but I mean, they haven't had Sean O'Brien for large swathes of this season. Players like Dan Levy, for example, are just playing sublime rugby. Yeah. And Scarlets just play sumptuous, beautiful stuff when they're in the mood. So I think this is genuinely a tie for... Delicious is how I would describe this tie. It's the one you want to watch. Scarlets, but the thing is as well, is that they have recent history. We know that Scarlets beat them on their run to the title when it was the Pro 12. So there's a little bit of history there. Maybe you could even hint at a bit of rivalry there. It's going to be fantastic fun. And I think both teams, there'll be a lot of offloads. I think we can say that.
Mike, can you see Scarlets pulling that off? I mean... We kind of would like it because it would be such an exciting game, and they would have to play mesmerising rugby in order to achieve that.
Well, I don't want to be mischievous and suggest that semi-final of the Pro 14, Leinster aren't quite as sharply motivated as they will be for the semi-final of the Champions Cup. But obviously Scarlets managed to mug them. Well, mug them's not fair. They absolutely ran rings around them in the semi-final last season of the Pro 14. Pro 12, of course, it was then. Yes, I mean, of course they can.
Maybe Leinster at the time were a bit like a club who have a pot of boiling water with a frog in it.
Well, yeah.
Sorry.
I mean, Irish rugby wasn't in such a great place a year ago. I mean, it all changes so quickly.
We love that frog so much, we feel for him.
It all changes so quickly. I mean... Wales gave Ireland a good thumping in Cardiff, the penultimate round of the last Six Nations, and people were wondering about Joe Schmidt's future. The Scarlets romped through to the final of the Pro 12, beating Leinster and thrashing Leinster and Munster on the way. And now suddenly it's turned around, and England are back-to-back Six Nations champions, back-to-back European champions in Saracens, and now English rugby's in crisis. And
was that your synopsis of the last 2 years of rugby history in one sentence?
Would you say I think
you've done it all.
How the wheel turns and so on. Ireland are back in the pink, and I would imagine Leinster will probably beat Scarlets. But I think Racing will.
You think Racing?
I mean, Racing's an interesting one. You don't know which team's going to turn up. They lost to Toulouse at the weekend. Now, I mean, that's another discussion for another day. Toulouse have managed to climb into the second position in the league. This is a team that we've been saying has turned themselves into a sleeping giant and been underperforming. That's a discussion for another day, what's happened to Toulouse. Racing have fallen out of the top two spots, but they made 12 changes for that game at the weekend. Their eyes are firmly on the prize with Europe. It's the one that they want. I mean, you don't invest that much money over that much time without saying that that's the glittering trophy that they want in their cabinet. Obviously, again, you know, fairy tale ending. How great a career would it be for Dan Carter if he ended it off in Europe with a big trophy to hold above his head? Maybe two, depends how the way
Dan Carter thing maybe a distraction or a temptation to feel an obligation to play him? Are they not slightly better without him? Or he came off the bench and
Pat
was great?
Pat Lambie started, didn't he?
Started in the quarterfinal, yeah.
Yeah, and Carter came on and completely transformed the game. So, yeah, you know, it's not... I mean, I said on this podcast, I had assumed that he was, you know, there were issues with how he was playing, but he proved me wrong by putting in a performance that he's still capable of turning it on in a big game. And he doesn't have to play 80 minutes.
Yeah.
But of course, again, I'm saying that would be a lovely narrative for it. Munster, an All Ireland final in Bilbao would be a fascinating prospect. It would certainly be good. I suppose there's Racing. I think even though they're playing so far away from home at a neutral venue, I don't know. Maybe it's their time.
Okay, well, just let's have some predictions. Who is the final going to be in Bilbao, Mike?
I will go Leinster Racing.
Al?
You know what, actually, this is the romantic version of this podcast, so I'm going Leinster Munster playing in Bilbao.
Is that romantic?
I suppose an All-Ireland final would be great fun.
But, I mean, they're two familiar faces, aren't they?
Absolutely, but it would still be good
sharp
fun.
Sharp end.
Okay, so, right,
romantic
fine.
Would have Scarlets. Okay, come on, you've got to.
Scarlets Munster?
I'll settle for that.
Oh, it's Scarlets Racing, is it? You know, if this is the Romantics podcast, then you want Scarlets in there, and you want Dan Carter as well. So
yeah.
DCB Scarlets.
Okay, ignore everything I've just said in the last couple of minutes.
That was the Ruck podcast.
Can I just give a quick shout out to one last thing?
That wasn't the Ruck podcast.
So. Can I just give a quick shout out to one thing? And it was the result that jumped off the page this weekend. Pithelli, and I probably pronounced that wrong, beat Colwyn Bay 141-10 in the Swalec National League One North. And they were starting for the first time 5 19-year-olds in their team.
That's a fairy tale.
That's a fairy tale.
They'll be in the Pro 14.
You know what they say about that Colwyn Bay team? Boiling water, frog. Nightmare.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for listening to The Ruck. We'll be back next week with a special with Stephen Jones talking about the Tyrrells League and the women's game. We were going to record that especially this week, but that's been postponed to next week, so please tune in for that. Thank you very much for listening. We'll be back soon.
As you're listening to me, Daisy, Apple's iPhone disassembly robot, is dismantling an iPhone into lots of recyclable parts. That's how Apple recovers more materials than conventional recycling methods. Thanks, Daisy. There's more to iPhone.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.